Raving Lunatic Mania!
This is it, 2015. We are finally gonna see how the future panned out.
I am so psyched. Hey look, Best Buy's still around.
Let's check out if they have hoverboards.
That's a hoverboard?
It has wheels and touches the ground.
What part of hover don't they get?
Let me guess, they haven't invented self-tying shoes yet either.
Or size-adjusting clothes.
Or flying cars or bionics that make you fight butter.
Guys, I'm thinking we were lied to.
What? That pisses me off. 2015 sucks. It's just the same as 2005. It looks just like 1989.
Where did we get the idea for this?
Hey, guys. My grandpa sent me to get some Szechuan sauce.
Sci-Fi Malady, Symptom 78, the future we wanted.
Alright, so we are now talking about Back to the Future 2. It's a week later and we're totally not wearing the same clothes.
It is definitely not 10:27 p.m. on a Saturday night before I fly out to Florida at a 5 a.m. flight and I have to leave my house at 3:30 a.m. That's definitely not what's happening right
and
now.
And we absolutely didn't record Back to the Future 1 right, like, 10 minutes ago. It was a week ago.
Oh, no. Totally. It's a but
we... As a matter of fact, if we happened to have been recording Back to the Future 1 just a few minutes ago and ran into ourselves recording Back to the Future 2 on the same night, it could cause,
a major paradox.
That could unravel the very fabric of the space-time continuum.
Right. Paradox. Jeez, this is heavy, Scott.
What's that word again?
Rick?
I did not sound like
no,
Rick,
it's your though. Grandpa.
I did not sound like Rick,
oh, I don't, Grandpa Rage Master.
Listen to it back.
I'll listen to it back.
Now Rage Master Rick is in the house.
Rage Master is now having an identity crisis.
If I was
Rage Master Rick,
if I was trying to do Rick, I'd do something like. Well,
I'm telling you, when you listen to that,
Rage Master Rick!
your Rage Master Rick voice comes out more and more as the podcast progresses.
You know, I'm wondering if that happens more and more in general in life. I'm waiting to go to class on Monday and then just say,
class!
You got that one wrong. You actually have to put the irregular verb. It's different.
Idiot.
So stupid, Morty.
It's getting better and better as you go on, too. Yeah. It's getting closer and closer to being dead on.
Actually, it's a secret plan that one day, between the Rick and Morty intro I wrote, plus the voice, that if the guys who write Rick and Morty ever tank it and don't want to do it, they'll come ask me to write. I'm available. I can do Rick.
Give me money.
I'm sure Dan Harmon will call you immediately.
Yeah. So Dan, I'll give you credit if you give me money.
This week we are talking about Back to the Future 2, staying in theme. You know, this is one of the examples of movies where the sequel doesn't ruin the movie in any way, shape, or form. I wouldn't say that this is quite a better movie than the original, but the thing that's nice about it is it's canonically almost minutes after. Actually, it is exactly minutes
directly
after the first movie,
yeah.
Which is something that I really love that these movies do, and they do it well. And you know, it's got the same director. It follows the same, uses the same actors, follows the same plot. Which
except
which
for
works
Jennifer
well.
In 1985, time one day goes by in all three of these movies.
Yeah.
In like actual movie time, it's what, about 3 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you also have to remember, we're also jumping, timelines?
Yeah. Well, because
we're changing time and stuff multiple times, so.
We definitely also get a little more understanding of the time paradox and all that in this movie, but we'll get to that soon. Yeah. So real quick, some of the facts about this movie. Now, this movie was made in 1989. The budget for the movie was $40 million. In the box office, it made $332 million, so just a little bit more than the original made, but it cost a little more, too. So
It still made
money. No, I thought the original made $381 million,
didn't it? Oh, did it make? Yeah. I thought you said $300 million.
No, okay. $381
million. Okay, so it didn't do as well as the original.
But still a lot of still money. Still a lot of money, time.
Yeah. Excuse me, but you made a mistake. In Back to the Future 1, Jennifer was played by Elizabeth Shue, a decidedly different actor. But in part two, she was played by... I'm sorry, in part two, she was Jennifer Shue.
Dorf, you made a mistake.
I don't make mistakes. I make mistakes.
You have to go punish yourself.
What did Captain Kirk tell the Nomad probe when it made a mistake and failed to catch its mistake?
Why don't you tell me, Scott?
You have to sterilize.
Oh,
you must self-sterilize.
No.
I will, but
you
point
did not
is,
correct your mistake by sterilization.
Elizabeth Shue replaced the actress who played Jennifer in part two. You are wrong. It is not returning cast. I just want to make that clear.
And for a moment, the actress that was going to play Jennifer in the first movie, when Elizabeth Shue had to temporarily step out because she wasn't available, was the actress who plays Jan in The Office.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was almost the Jennifer for this movie.
Interesting.
That would have changed my entire viewpoint of Jan.
Wow. I mean, wait a minute. Jan? Oh,
so the original actress who was going to work across from Eric Stoltz, the original Marty, was going to be Jan from The Office. But she was too tall to work with Michael J. Fox. So they booted her and brought back Elizabeth Shue, who was the original casting.
You're too tall. Get out of here.
That is such a good reason. I love that. Let's dive right into it. This movie is filled with zany hijinks and over the top everything. You know, the effects are great and fantastic, but it takes the simplicity of the story from the first one, and it kind of craps all over it. You know, it makes everything that much more over the top. You get all kinds of information about the timelines. You get a paradox that or a time split that happens, which this movie does well, which a lot of movies don't do very well. And it's just fun and awesome. You know, and again, it starts with the ending of the second one. You know, it has one of the most famous lines from all movies anywhere. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And I think, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the first movie, you know, the Hello McFly being the catchphrase, but that may be one of the most iconic catchphrases as well. The where we're going, we don't need roads.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you another thing from the start of this movie. I can never empty a pop can out into the sink. Never without thinking about Mr. Fusion.
Mr.
Never. Yes. I swear, I'm not lying. Every single time I've got a half-empty Diet Mountain Dew can of the 26 that I drink a week and I'm emptying out the remains down the sink, I flash back to Doc pouring the Miller High Life, the champagne of beers, into Mr. Fusion.
Saying, I need fuel, which is interesting. We've come from Scott trying to use an empty mayonnaise jar and straws to send it back in
and
time
hangers.
To picturing pouring empty Mountain Dew into Mr. Fusion, which, hey, it does look like antifreeze, so I guess you're not too far off pouring it into a car.
The actual ingredients in Mountain Dew or Diet Mountain Dew might be far more deadly than drinking antifreeze.
I'm sure they are.
The coloration.
Antifreeze will kill you immediately. Diet Mountain Dew will give you slow, painful cancer.
So which one is worse?
Well, thanks.
We're still not sure.
Sorry, Scott.
So which one is worse? We're not sure yet.
All that stuff about yellow number five is a myth.
Hey, Scott, we'll come back to you and figure out if the slow, painful death is worth this for you in a few years.
He'll say yes.
One thing is for certain.
Got those extra years.
What's worse than all of those is, what was it, Jaws 5? Is that what Marty saw?
Jaws 19.
Jaws 19. That is definitely going to be a more slow and painful end than anything that could kill us now.
That's what happens when Mickey Mouse bought Jaws.
Which is funny because Jaws ended with, what was it? The Revenge, which technically was part four.
Right.
At the time, people probably thought it was going on endlessly. But whereas today, sequels are just, they used to call 80s the decade of the sequel.
we've surpassed it.
Oh,
we've made the 80s look sad for sequels. The MCU alone.
We need a new word other than sequel, because sequel is not, doesn't explain it well enough.
No.
Nope.
You know,
well, we have it now. It's called universe.
No, oh, no. Yeah. You know what?
The continuverse.
You know what? Marvel does it well. It's phases.
Yeah.
Phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. But that's a less used term.
Yeah. And maybe continuations, and whatever. But yeah, there's... Now we're just going, well, and we're not even using proper number systems anymore. It's not 1, 2, 3. Now we're going, throw a letter in there, a name in. Now
it's
we're
almost,
back to numbers.
Almost better that way.
It kind of is. It's better to just know, hey, this is the second movie. I don't need to call it Captain America 2. I can call it, you know.
Well, I'm saying they're doing that, but they're also throwing it back and forth. So now.
So if you made the movie today, it would be Back to the Future. Biff is a womanizing wife abuser.
Biff's womanizing.
Well, you know, before we go too far past this, I think something that's awesome about this movie that isn't done very often in time travel movies or movies into the future anymore is that this movie shows a almost utopian-esque or maybe more commercialized future, a more believable future than this what we get from most movies that go into the future, dystopian or...
Zemeckis and Bob Gale said they did that intentionally. They wanted a vision of the future where anything that's wrong with the future is the result of the people in the future and not the technology.
And I think that's great. That's a fantastic thing to see, because it's not something we see. I can't think of anything. If any of you can, let me know. But I can't think of anything that we have a future-based show or movie on that doesn't show some sort of disarray or dystopian or...
They definitely, they set out to not give you, and they said, we don't want an Orwellian or dystopian future. We don't want to paint technology as the enemy. If something goes wrong, it's because people have gone wrong.
Star Trek, sort of, if you just look at it from the human perspective, humanity has reached that apex. But, I was going to mention the future, because what's funny to me about it is it goes very much in that overly optimistic yet almost unrealistic future belief that... Really, the 50s and 60s had when they would say, like, the original Lost in Space was set in 1999. So they thought by the end of the 90s, we'd be a spacefaring race, you know?
What future was this again? Oh, 2015?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they went that bloody far in the future. Now, granted, technology has picked up considerably. Okay.
I don't think this is so over the top.
I actually want to defend the futurists from the 80s and the 60s, especially the 60s.
Hang on, I'm not done yet. So I'm just saying that I think they took that really optimistic future that's a little unbelievable that was common for them growing up and made it. Now, does that mean it's bad? No, not at all. It's a great looking future, and that the symptom that says it all, the future we want. Because we look at that and maybe the style is something where we're like, eh, but it looks great. But I just think it's funny how they made that over the top type future. So Scott,
Corey, you were going somewhere.
Oh. No. I was just gonna say I don't think it's that over the top. I think that the future that they set up, a lot of that stuff has really come true by the day of 2015. You know,
some of it.
Books aren't books anymore. We read books on Kindles.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the biggest problem with anything that's going to do a future piece is that we don't look at Aliens. Aliens is a prime example of that.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know what technology is going to stick around, what technology won't. Mm-hmm. We can try and guess, but we're typically wrong. But I think they did a really good job. You know, stand aside the hoverboard and the flying cars. You know, there's big TV projectors on every street corner. That is our future.
Yeah.
That is what we have today.
True. That's true.
You know, and
not
absolutely
holographic, but we're getting there.
We already have holograms.
Without
the background.
Well, yeah.
I
right.
mean, just like a projector. But yeah, we're that's why I said we're getting there.
Right.
Well, and so, this is the other thing. Sorry, but I think Scott was going to go here that, you know, sometimes technology futurists think we're going to go one way and we surpass whatever they even dreamt of. So I think they did a good job of setting this in the future, but not like way too far. Like at 2115. No, it's 2015.
Mm-hmm. I think what they got wrong and what all the futurists from the 60s and the 80s got wrong is the acceleration curve. And it's understandable. My great grandmother was born in 1911. She passed away in 2004.
Wow.
The world she was born into, you were driving the Model T.
Yeah.
People still went around on horses. You didn't have indoor plumbing in all homes. You had outhouses. Yeah, you didn't have electricity in more than 70% of the homes. Electricity was new. You didn't have the telephone. I mean, the telephone was new. All of this stuff that she was born into. And right before she died, the tablet came out, the cell phone came out, the internet had come out. Look at all this stuff, the change of the world that she saw. And if you're sitting there as a person, you know, born in 1920, 1930, and you're writing in 1960 and 1950, and that rapid pace, even the change of the world between 1911 and 1950, you would think that it would continue at that pace. You never actually think that the pace of technological advancement is going to slow down. And our pace of technological advancement has slowed down. We've had refinements in our gadgets and how small computers are, and we've had refinements in the quality of the gadgets. But when's the last breakthrough invention we had? The cell phone?
Right.
The last real breakthrough invention that has changed life.
Microprocessors.
Right. And it's the internet and the cell phone. And there were so many breakthrough inventions that were changing life between 1900 and 1950. I mean, I could take a person out of the Roman Empire and drop them into the 1850s. And aside from the railroad, there isn't much you're going to have to explain to them. The railroad and a gun. And the rest of it, they're pretty much going to get. You take that same person from the Roman Empire and drop them into 1955. And I don't know how long. They might never adapt.
Well, look.
That's how much the world changed.
But like I said, I don't think that they're that far off as compared to a lot of things that do it this way.
I just think they missed the curve.
It's also, well, and the other thing too is it's zany and goofy and they want to,
show
how funny some of the stuff is. Look, the self-tying laces is hilarious because who wouldn't want to have shoes that tie themselves? And the
size adjusting fit.
That's
I love when his jacket has dryer mode activated.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes.
So I think that some of it was meant for comedic effect and it hit the mark. It did its job. And I loved that, even though the, you know, Jaws 19.
Cafe 80s.
Movie. Or the
Jaws
Cafe
19.
80s.
Jaws versus the Sharknado.
You know what? We might as well say that we do have Jaws 19.
Yeah, the Cafe 80s was funny because even Doc referred to it as, it's the Cafe 80s. You know, one of those retro things that they try to do but miss the mark or doesn't do a good job. It's almost like he was calling out the movie for retro, being retro about the 50s. But inadvertently making fun of us now without knowing it.
I think they knew it. They knew it. But something that's always happened.
Yeah. But then also, if you notice, when they go to the video game and, you got to use your hand to play that. It's like a baby's thing. And who says that? None other than Frodo Baggins himself, Elijah Wood.
Yeah. And that's great, too, because we're at a point now where video gaming technology is almost at that point where we don't need controllers anymore. You know, we've got VR, we've got all kinds of cool stuff. So that I love that point in it. The other thing too is this sets the stage for the big plot twist and the big dilemma of the rest of the movie. You know, old Biff gets the sports almanac and takes it back and alters the course of time. And this is what I was saying by it did it well. They put a timeline that is conceivable and would make sense to happen, and they run the entire movie around it, and it's not so convoluted like Interstellar or... Which I liked Interstellar, but it's not so convoluted like Interstellar or...
if you've ever seen that Chris Nolan thing where he's drawing lines on the billboard, on the chalkboard going...
On the billboard.
Here's time. Yeah. Here's the time. Here's this, here's us, and we go back, and he's just going in circles, and I swear he's doing it just to confuse people, so we go, ooh, how smart you are.
Right, and it's also not like the Cloverfield Paradox or anything like that.
No.
Doc literally goes to the chalkboard, he draws two lines, you immediately understand what you're in for, and what has happened.
I gotta have my Dork Henderson moment.
Okay.
Doc explains wonderfully in that moment, when Marty says, so we go back to the future and stop, we can't, because it's the future of this. As soon as Biff got in the DeLorean and went back in time, that future that Marty and Doc are in ceases to exist because it's the future of this.
Right.
Marty and that Marty and Doc cease to exist because they never could have done anything that they did. Which in that moment in time means Biff can't steal the almanac, which means everything resets.
Right.
Which yeah. entirely well, back to movie one.
Well, this
and
is
we
a,
should wake yeah. with Marty in the alarm
not
clock,
existing
the clocks.
Almost.
Yeah. Well, it should be the ultimate reset button and the credits to Back to the Future 1 should roll.
Well, again, this
and
is,
it should go all the way yeah. in a loop to that point every time.
Well, this is the problem with temporal mechanics. We are not 100% sure what would happen because
they just had to be shielded by temporal wake.
That is, yeah. unless, of course, you're in another dimension. Get out of here, dork.
Live from Biff Tannen's multi-million-dollar hotel casino, this is Biff Spitz. And now the man of the hour, the luckiest man on earth, and all-around patriot, Biff Tannen.
Good evening, and welcome to Biff Spitz. Tonight, I'm going to give you a bit of advice that help you become successful like me. But not too successful, otherwise you'll have to compete against me. I'm not sure anyone wants to do that against the luckiest man on earth. My advice, get some capital, however you can earn, and invest in something big like energy. People need lights, am I right? Then get some politicians that'll help your vision. Take it from me. I got casinos legal and now Hill Valley's on the map. Last thing I gotta say is, God bless America.
This has been Biff's Bits.
Well, since we've gotten into it, let's start talking about some of the paradoxian things that happen in this movie.
Oh, so many.
And one of my favorites is, you know, Doc constantly is telling Marty, you can't run into your past self. You can't run into your past self. It'll destroy the universe and everything will be ruined.
And runs into him back.
And the main focal point of the plot is that Biff goes back in time
and talks to himself.
And look, I understand that Biff is stupid and the other Biff is old, so maybe he doesn't recognize himself. But by what Doc said, just looking at each other could destroy everything. But it's explained away with Biff's stupidity.
To be fair, it did unravel the space-time continuum that they were in and create a new space-time continuum.
That's true.
But it didn't destroy the universe.
Well, he didn't say it would.
Doc is prone to hyperbole.
He didn't say it assuredly would.
It didn't destroy the multiverse. It could have destroyed the universe within the multiverse.
Here's what did happen, though.
At
that point in time, what happened was nothing because Biff was too stupid to realize that Biff was himself.
Again, we're back to Biff rolling a negative on his intelligence score.
That is my favorite line in Back to the Future 2. He always did have a way with the ladies.
Get out of my car, old man. Yeah. I gotta say.
And then he lets him drive the car.
Yeah.
Without no more.
Oh, wait, here's the melody. He knows how to start my car. Yeah, let's let him drive it. Let's follow the crazy old man wherever he wants to go.
And yeah.
And there we go again. Old guy with it. What? Mm-hmm.
As Thomas said,
young Biff could take old Biff, so he was never in any danger.
as Thomas said there, intelligence. It's not, for some people, it is the dump stat.
Well, it's not a Tannen family trait.
Well, yeah, Tannen.
Baff!
Tannen's nowhere near as intelligent as Plato, the mentally challenged Ninja Turtle, so.
Oh, man.
That's saying something. That's definitely saying something.
That's an insider joke right there, Sickies.
We'll tell that story one day.
We'll save it.
You
sure?
We'll save it for the RPG podcast when we finally do it.
Yeah,
the tabletop
2058.
Well, I'll just go back in time and make it, and then we'll have it now.
But then we won't have this timeline, and there'll be a major paradox.
Rage Master Rick.
I can't do Doc Brown. Okay, this is why I told you someone else has to be Doc Brown because I've lapsed into
that's
Rick.
That's I keep saying Rage Master Rick.
Not Rage Master Doc.
There's infinite dimensions.
I'm Rage Master Rick.
There's infinite dimensions with infinite possibilities, but only one Rage Master Rick.
You know what? I think I need a vote. Should I'm Rage Master Rick replace the Raving Lunatic Media yell at the beginning of every Sci-Fi Melody podcast?
No, I will not do it.
No, but you know what it should?
I already have it isolated. I can just pull it from wherever it's been done.
You know what it should precursor? Rage Master rips a clip.
Ooh, yes, it should. Yes.
That's absolutely where it should be.
What's that?
You should before Rage Master rips a clip, it should be, I'm Rage Master Rick! And I'm ripping a clip!
I could do something like that. I'll go with that. Just don't get rid of the thing, Scott. Just don't get rid of the thing.
All right.
But, so, but I'm kind of down with that, Corey.
Yeah, I like it. So some other funny, really funny things to me is immediately when Marty goes back to the crappy future, and Biff tries to kill him and misses him with every shot because he sucks. And then,
oh yeah, that's like that's definitely a point.
It's like, well, Biff clearly trained stormtroopers.
Biff also has a never-ending revolver.
Right.
The revolver's chamber is like a TARDIS. It exists in a different dimension because, like, he at least fires a dozen shots at Marty in the room, and he still thinks he has a bullet in that gun on the roof.
No, no, Scott, you don't get it. You see, he's watching. If you remember the scene where he's in the hot tub with the two girls, he's watching the movie A Fistful of Dollars. And those old spaghetti westerns, it took a lot to have to reload. So he's using that kind of a gun, which wouldn't surprise me if Zemeckis did that.
Can I say also, and then we'll get back to funny things, observations, that is the ultimate Chekhov's gun. They show you the bulletproof vest in like Act 3.
Yeah.
Early in Back to the Future 2 for the payoff at the end of Back to the Future 3.
Yeah.
That is the greatest Chekhov's gun ever.
That is a brilliant play. Yeah.
Masterful writing, Zemeckis. You are the man.
Well, it makes the movie great. You know, it's... These three movies, even though I don't really like the third one, it's mostly because it's a Western.
I hate Clara.
But these movies are written really well, and for the most part, they're pretty continuitous. I have a few complaints about that. So one of the other goofs, the big goofs, in my opinion, is when Biff has the almanac. And I know you guys are going to explain it away, but it's not clearly explained in the movie, so I say that it doesn't exist, and it's a continuity error. So we've got.
I think it's continuity here. I agree with you.
Yeah. Yes, actually agree.
We've
got the almanac. We see the almanac from every iteration of where it is. It starts with the old man. Old man Biff brings it to young man Biff. Young man Biff has it, sticks it in his pocket. And then we see crappy future Biff pull out the almanac and show Marty. In all of those times, the cover is always the same. It's always the sports almanac.
Mm-hmm.
Until, for some reason, Biff decides, and again... This is not within idiot Biff's wheelhouse. He's too stupid to ever have done this.
Random natural 20 on a random intelligence check.
That's my first ding on the continuity error. Biff would not be smart enough to do this, but somehow he switches the covers so the sports almanac is in a porno mag.
Elementary chaos theory suggests that the minute that you go back in time and enter a new add a new element back in time, then chaos theory would suggest that things would change, and that's why that the cover won't be on the book when he wins his first million at the track later, because the timeline has already changed. It's elementary chaos theory, people, and the dinosaurs. The dinosaurs are going to eat us all now.
But here's the thing. You're saying that because he took the dust cover off, the book is unaccounted for.
No, I'm saying that in the crappy future, we see that the cover is there.
Yeah.
We see the same cover. We don't see the Ooh La La cover, which he would have switched
it's a good
it for.
Point. It comes out of the lockbox in his safe.
Yep. Yeah. And at no point could Biff have gone back and gotten that cover.
Because it was thrown.
You can explain it however you want. But if it didn't happen on screen, in my opinion, it's a continuity error.
Okay, so what you're saying is that he had the almanac, swapped it out for the girly mag.
Right.
The dust cover.
The crappiest girly
mag. And therefore,
mag
the dust cover is gone forever.
Well, because. No. I'm saying that. The continuity
how does he get the
is,
dust cover back from Strickland?
Right.
Yes.
Because the dust cover goes on the Ooh La La magazine
and also,
to hide it.
So how does
he get the dust cover
back
from Strickland's
office? Well, and that's where I'm
going
to go back to Scott, who already argued the good reason, but he's not going to accept it despite he just convinced himself, but he's not going to because he's got to be a devil's advocate even against himself. And that is that you already tampered with the past by him going back.
Hey, but it's a perfect retcon, but it's a retcon.
Up to this point, though, Marty's done nothing to affect that past. Other than hide in the back of the car, which affected Biff.
But what do you mean? Those oil cans would have landed somewhere else, which would have thrown off the weight in the Ford and would have changed the time arrival.
He's there. It's a continuity error.
It is a continuity. It's a good retcon. It's a good retcon, but it's a retcon. It's a continuity error. Zemeckis did not think that one through.
Anybody else, any other movie, if this was a J.J. Abrams movie, Rage Master would hate this part of it.
No, if this were a J.J. Abrams movie, I'd drop a load because he actually finished it.
That's J.J. Abrams
finished a plot. I didn't know he could do that. I'm so surprised. I'm gonna plot.
If J.J. Abrams wrote Back to the Future 2, the DeLorean would, the time machine would come back reimagined as a Corvette, and Doc Brown would have dyed his hair red.
Good point.
And had a de-aging process.
All right, but again,
and somehow Marty would have just shown up with the solution out of nowhere, and Spock would just show up magically with Han Solo to save the day.
And then we would end with
10 mysteries.
And instead of the letters saying that Doc is in 1885 as a blacksmith, they would have just had the Western Union guy roll up and go, "Are you Marty McFly?" Cut to credits.
Cut. Yeah.
But my favorite part of that entire conversation was that Rage Master said he would drop a load. Which is funny to me. Yep. Anyway.
Go
ahead.
I also want to just say I'm shocked at this movie and Marty's ability not to scream throughout
his
this whole
pain threshold.
Yes.
Oh yeah, yeah. Marty for some reason has perfect control of every sound he ever makes.
To be honest with you, if I'm hiding under a blanket and someone throws some oil cans at my nuts, I'm not staying silent.
Yeah.
Or if Strickland breaks my hand by rolling his chair into it.
Nope.
No, I didn't see that coming. I'm screaming.
Or you get hit in the face by a door. Nope, no sound.
I just, like I said, I think that's a big continuity goof. But it's fine. I'm not going to hold it against the movie. I just wanted to bring it up.
Okay.
Because I knew it would be a good topic of conversation there.
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Is it just me or... Okay, they have the Skyway, right? With flying cars, Skyway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So... do you think that with a Skyway, there would be traffic jams?
Yes.
Since I'm trying to keep it sci-fi here, would there be traffic jams with a Skyway?
Because I'm almost positive there would be, per se, certain areas and routes you have to fly in. So there's... it's just like a road. You would have certain area you'd fly in.
Yeah, you'd have to have flight paths.
Yeah.
And it would have to be daily flight paths in order to organize. Look, airplanes do it. Airplanes have flight paths that they have to stay within. True. So that,
yes, but you never have to slow your airplane down to 100 miles an hour because the airplane in front of you is going too slow.
But you do have different altitudes.
Yeah, right. You also have to adjust where you're going and everything because in a matter of 1 second, two airplanes could crash into each other. So I would say that, yes, if you had airways... would you have traffic on those airways? Absolutely.
You would have traffic. I don't think you'd have a traffic jam because I think by the time that you had flying cars and you had a civilian airway network, you would have the air traffic system communicating with your car to tell you what altitude band you're in. And we have so many thousands of feet to be able to put your 3 foot tall car in that the computer would move you within the altitude. Yeah.
You would have to have a computer controlled air traffic system.
I don't think we'd have thousands of feet though. Maybe a few.
Well, the logistics
100 or something. But
yeah, I'm going to go with Thomas. Thousands is what you're going to be doing tomorrow. Scott.
You might have 1,000 feet to work with your flying car.
No, I'd say maybe 100. Maybe 100.
A couple hundred.
Yeah, but thousands is that we're talking. You're getting way up in the atmosphere.
You need to start depressurizing.
If you've got enough thrust to get your car off the ground, at 1,000 feet, you still have your own oxygen and you don't need oxygen.
Well, no. You would have issues with air thickness.
Well, okay, so...
I don't think you'd have traffic jams in the Skyway.
Would we have...
Not like we have on the ground, because you'd have the ability to go above and below accidents.
That's what I'm saying.
Would we have what Back to the Future had as far as air traffic? If we had air traffic today, probably not.
No.
But it's funny. So.
Yeah. It's actually the reason we don't have flying cars for the most part.
Yeah.
The logistics, it's not that they can't make a personal flying vehicle. It's what is the logistics of actually moving traffic through the air with your individual flying. Look at how much problems drones cause.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That alone is
Just pitch, just pitching that out there. And the other one is which technology? I'm sorry, Cor. I'm not trying to.
No, you're good.
I'm just. These are questions that have been bugging me, and this is which technology that's in that movie we don't have. Which is the most feasible? Let's say in the next 10, 15 years.
Hoverboard.
Hoverboards, okay.
Oh yeah, hoverboard. Why? Honestly, why don't we have
hoverboards? You mean the actual hover?
Yeah, the actual
stupid one that
crap that
not those stupid ones with wheels that people insist. Oh, I'm hovering. I'm hovering. There's wheels on the ground. You are generating friction from contact with the ground. It is not a hoverboard.
I'm actually going to disagree that the hoverboard is possible because we don't have an anti the
gravity.
Closest thing we have to an anti gravity system. Or a repulsor lift is magnetic rails, but you can't just put magnetic rails on the ground for your hoverboard to repulse against. So until we figure out a way to nullify gravity, the hoverboard is just an impossibility.
Well,
that isn't set on a magnetic on a maglift system.
So Mattel is not going to be making a hoverboard.
I'm saying hoverboard in the relation that we have a board that hovers. It doesn't
now you might be able to get a pit bull.
No. Here's
we might be able to make a pit bull.
Hold on. Let me finish my point. Hold on. The reason I say that is we have jetpacks. So, and if we have jetpacks, a hoverboard is definitely feasible. It may not be.
That's why I said you might be able to make a pit bull.
No, we have technically, if you just want a board that hovers, we have that. The issue being it's on a giant, you have to place a huge plate of copper out, and then you have to super cool your hoverboard. So you're sitting on a extremely cool hoverboard, which is magnetically repulsed by a giant sheet of copper. It's not
very
exactly
limited in scope.
I think it might be the hydration microwave that instead of doing a microwave where it takes the water out to hydrate
the
pizza.
That would be awesome.
That might be the most realistic thing, but I don't know the logistics of actually getting something that's been freeze dried and adding water to it so that you hydrate it and flash cook it.
Hydrate to level 4, please.
Is it ready?
Yeah,
I suppose that would. That's probably you're probably right. That would be the one that would be the most feasible. But one that I want the most is a hoverboard. So that's the one that's most feasible to me.
I would wager the clothing, like power laces or adjusting clothing.
No,
that seems feasible to me in the next 15 years.
I'm not sure about the size adjusting fit. Yeah.
Well,
no, I might agree with you in a way that we are getting. Because the military, again, being the military, experimenting with stuff like this.
Exactly.
They've been experimenting with fit clothing that has some electronics in it and some fitting ability to it to kind of get close to that.
Yeah,
so
that could be possible.
I don't know if it's going to get like, I don't know if it's going to be like Marty's jacket where it's three sizes too big and it's got to adjust that way. But like if it's a little longer or a little too short.
Would it be comfortable to wear on a daily basis?
Well, here's the problem with that. This is why I don't think that that's something that is going to be, it might be more feasible, but it won't be something that's commercialized because clothing technology hasn't advanced in centuries.
I mean, we've got dry fit.
Hang on now. When I said feasible, I don't necessarily mean commercial.
Yeah. I don't think it will ever reach that point for like self-tying laces. While that sounds like a cool idea, it's just not something that.
Can you imagine how much Nike would sell a pair of self-tying Air Jordans for?
Well,
$1,300.
They made those though. Yeah, they made like 5,000 of them and gave them away to people. But yeah, that's the thing is like, think about it this way. We pay $700 on average for a cell phone, start putting tech into clothing, and no one's going to want to buy clothes anymore.
I'm going to be honest with you. When I think of a comfortable jacket, I don't think of it having electro servo motors in it.
And I guess the counter to that, I'll play devil's advocate to myself. Idiots go out and spend $120 on ripped jeans and jeans that have.
Exactly.
How about the white t-shirt that Kanye West sells? That is just a plain white t-shirt that he sells for like $585, and people buy it.
People buy it.
Dumb. So
Again, I'm not saying that this is going to be commercial grade. I was talking military.
There's a lot of technology that the military uses that we'll never see.
That's why I'm saying the military is probably going to be. They're already working on this clothing thing, so I'd think that would possibly be the first one we'd see.
I'm just saying stuff that could happen, or like Griff's exoskeleton thing, where Marty tries to punch him with his one tactic we pointed out. What's that? And then cold cock you while you're not looking, but when he tries that Griff, and then his stilts lift him up really high. Although they claim that was bionics, but you know you could. Have some exosuit do that, I guess.
I don't think human bionics is something we're going to look at
in the next 15 years. No,
even in our lifetime, I don't think so.
Probably not.
But getting a little bit back to the other things, another goof in this movie that I found, and I said it over and over again while we were rewatching it, was just the inability for Biff to notice anything around him.
Like a car door open and while he's driving it.
Marty is literally within peripheral vision the whole time.
With his arm in the car. And
right.
That's the one I've been trying to be nice and not criticize, but that's the one when I first saw it, it's like, wait a minute. You're driving. He opens your passenger side door. Somehow you don't hear that. And then he's reaching in and you don't suddenly feel the wind or anything. Dude, if I open my car door while I'm driving, it sounds totally different, okay?
Well, you just, right, oh, I gotta bring something up there. You said here. He was in the back seat at one point talking on walkie-talkie.
That's the other one. How does Biff not hear that?
Hey, guys!
He's brilliant.
I'm going to talk to you. Can you hear me?
It was exposition. No, it wasn't exposition. I don't know. It was narration.
Okay. I mean,
All I have to say is Biff, A, rolled a negative in his intelligence and also somehow has a negative in his perception.
Or he was just really focused on Perry Como there.
Papa loves Mambo. Mama loves Mambo.
Car flew down behind him. Dropped off a guy on a hoverboard. Flew away. Biff doesn't notice that. He notices the small thump as Marty grabs the car. Starts looking around and everything.
But he doesn't hear the cool sound effects of...
Right. Yeah. But... Doesn't notice Marty until he's already halfway in the car. But then, and this is where I really get annoyed with it and get it less being funny. He notices Marty in the rearview mirror as he thinks he shook him off. That is crap. That's nonsense. No.
I love the fact that when Biff like tries to ram Marty into the wall at 40 miles an hour, he's like, that'll teach him. Murdered him. That'll teach him.
This
and
is
then
murder,
he thinks he's dead. You think he's dead and you didn't see the red mist of goo behind the car. But then again, you missed the flying DeLorean.
Biff notices nothing until he has to notice something. And Biff is an idiot until he doesn't have to be an idiot anymore.
When he crashes into a manure truck.
Right.
After he got really excited about chasing down.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's most
Biff
of it's
kind of looked
funny.
Like he was having a moment with his best pal while he was running Marty down in that tunnel. I've never seen a man so creepily excited about murder a man in a tunnel.
Yeah. Another reason why Biff Tannen will go down as one of the best bad guys in a movie ever. Just even though I guess you could argue he's psychotic, but he doesn't. He's not like the guy from Seven or something. He's not like a serial killer, Hannibal Lecter. He's just bully times 10.
I also love the fan theory that Biff succeeded in killing Marty at least once and maybe multiple times. And that's how Doc knew to be right there at that time without seeing what's going on in the tunnel to at just the right second drop down that rope of flags for Marty to grab and fly up on. That is I know it's not real. I know Zemeckis doesn't sign off on it, but it's a fantastic fan theory.
I also like the fact that it was later ripped off by episode 8, which we all acknowledge, okay? When Finn drops down, we all acknowledge that's a ripoff. You said it, Scott. Don't go back.
Which scene? I'm sorry. Which scene are we talking
about? The scene where after he fights Captain
Phasma. Oh, he loses to Phasma and he pulls a Marty McFly.
And then he decides to drop, and then he comes back up, and Phasma goes down like a wuss.
Imitation's the highest form of flattery.
Yeah, I guess.
All right, so we talked about the goofs.
Oh, wait, one more goofy thing.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm sure it was a great effect for 1989 when this movie was made. It doesn't hold up in 4D. Leah Thompson's fake boobs.
Oh, fit 4K?
In 4K, I said 4D.
Hold up in
4K.
Yeah.
Her double D fake boob
Scott
prosthetic.
4D with boobs. What is happening?
We don't want to know.
We do not.
The double D fake boob prosthetic does not hold up. It is clearly just a fake rubber set of boobs that they've attached to her. It probably worked in 1989, but 4K ruins it.
Well, I'm sorry, but 4K kind of ruins most of the effects.
Most movies. I didn't notice it, and now thanks, Scott. The next time I watch this movie on my TV, I'm going to be looking at that. And yeah, that sounds creepy.
How did you not notice it? I mean, Marty's like, you're so big.
Well, that being
that's
said,
what she said.
Most of the effects do hold up. Because
okay, if I had my magic wand, I would ban that phrase. It's as abused as the hi-fi. We do it too much.
All right.
Back to Corey.
Shush. Okay, that was a preemptive shush.
That's all right. That being said, the effects of this movie, because they're practical practical effects instead of CGI, they actually hold up really well. You know, the DeLorean flying over Biff's car and, you know, most of the scenes with the DeLorean flying, a lot of the future stuff, it holds up really well because they're practical effects and not CGI, which CGI ages in about 4 minutes and looks like crap almost immediately. So that's something that I really loved about this movie. You know, that and the simplicity of the story keeps it to where you're entertained just seeing the really cool things and the funny stuff that's happening. It keeps the story level and grounded in a way that you can absolutely enjoy it multiple times.
Okay, I'm sorry, it's Corey. You introduced this, so I thought of another flaw.
Okay.
Darn it, Corey, why'd you do this?
Because it's my favorite thing to do.
So they go ahead in the future to save Marty's kids, right?
Right.
And then you get to the end of part three, where he's like, well, your future hasn't been written yet, so make it a good one. So in other words, that whole plot thread's a waste.
No, I think
they went to the future to save his kids, and then later we're like, well, you know, your future's not written yet, so meh.
Well,
it's kind of
also
a waste, isn't
no,
it?
No, we're getting.
I think that's next week's discussion too.
Yeah, okay, put that on the back
sure,
burner.
For sure.
Then. Put that on the back
because well, I have something to say. Oh crap, I might not. Well, no. Yeah. I'll be here next week.
So
well,
I think you said. Go ahead, Thomas.
Well, I was just going to say the other issue that we didn't bring up is well, Biff is a little bit of a jerk in the. When they go back, it's like wife beating and
yeah,
it's like
rapist.
Boy, there's okay. So there's you know you watch this movie and you'd have a problem with it today. And Biff comes in and just flattens Lorraine, throws her to the ground. He is abusive. He threatens her. He's verbally abusive to her and Marty, and then he threatens to cut off her kids and basically just blackmails her into staying. And so he's been physically and mentally abusive, and he's blackmailed her.
No doubt. And he's cheating on her, too.
And he's cheating on her. And then Marty says something, and she goes, I had it coming. Oh, man. I had it coming. And he's a good provider.
This is nothing out of the ordinary.
It wasn't glorifying it, though. And it wasn't glorifying it. It was showing you a battered woman syndrome and how bad Biff was. But, oh, that's a brutal scene to watch.
And unfortunately, this, too, is not out of the continuity of the side of Lorraine we've seen. In the first movie, we talked about this last week for the first movie, we see the first thing we see of Lorraine is that she's an alcoholic and she hates her life.
She's an alcoholic in any timeline.
Yeah. And you know, we can
even in the young one, when she's drinking and he's like, you drink too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so this is just showing us, I think it's less of a glorification of that, and I know you said it wasn't, but I think it's more of a just showing you what could be, how bad things could be just based on, you know, a poor decision or a mistake that was made. So, you know, and I think they do it really well while keeping everything pretty lighthearted. This movie does put in a little bit of deeper meaning in a place where comedic relief is everywhere, but I like that a lot. And again, you know, I think it's I want to talk about the things that we really like about this movie. And like I said, I think I've gone as far as I can with that.
I think this movie does where this movie succeeds and why it's an enjoyable movie is that it is they went really heavy on the comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they did a very good job on the comedy. They also showed you a vision of the future, and people love a vision of the future, and they had fun with it. And then they made it a nostalgia piece. And then something that they did that is just brilliant is they went back into their own movie.
Oh, yeah.
And they showed you the first movie from a different angle and let you see that movie from a different perspective.
And it looked great.
well ahead of its time doing it. And
other than just having the one issues of them somehow missing things.
That's the better half of this movie.
I think he took his wallet. Yes. Did he take his wallet? I think he took his wallet.
And things that you just sit there going, man,
that guy.
They're dumb.
The second half of that movie is the better half of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's it saves the movie. And it was actually, for its time, a really good piece of filmmaking. I'm not sure how many movies at that time had went back into their own prior show and showed it to you from a different angle.
Unfortunately, this movie made it to where a lot of movies that...
Oh, then followed it.
Definitely don't have any business doing so have followed it, like Interstellar.
Not everybody can do that. I mean, not every. No. I know there was that one Deep Space Nine episode where they did that.
With Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that did it very well. Yeah, but again, that's one of the exceptions.
And they had an easier time doing it because it was, 10 years later after this and the technology was better. But I think where this movie falls down and where this movie loses some points in the end is, one, the first half of the movie is a replay of the last movie. It's the same gigs. The Biff Griff thing is the same thing as the diner scene.
Well, but the thing that makes that
old
okay,
Biff says, I've seen this before.
Right, but the thing that makes that okay is they do it in a different... It's like changing the scenery. They don't make it to where it's boring to watch, so you forgive that. Again, it's a comedy.
It's the same scene in a different set.
It's the same
scene in a different set.
But they do that in part three, too. That's their shtick. It's like watching Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck go at it, and it's the same gags, but they're funny because it happens a little bit differently.
And we like it, so we accept it. If we didn't like it, we'd say it was lazy writing and come up with something new and original for this. So there's some originality that's lost in the plot.
Except this was original, though.
But the bigger, it was original. But when I say when you steal your own stuff and reuse it, you can't get credit for being original for reusing your own stuff.
Yeah. But you can't be guilty of copying because you're copying off yourself, which is like you're stuck in that limbo.
You did the exact same scene and you just changed the set. Yeah. That's all you did. And I think that's a little bit of where some of this movie, it's not major. You can get past it. It's part of the fun. It's part of the shtick. I think where this movie really, in comparison to the first movie, loses something is you lost the human element. Driving the first movie is the relationship between Doc Brown and Marty and George and Lorraine. And on a different level, Marty and Jennifer. None of that is in this movie. The Marty-Jennifer relationship is a side story, even more so than the first movie, and is irrelevant. The Lorraine-George story is gone. There's nothing to it. I know that he's dead. But that's still not a relationship. They don't talk about the relationship. He's dead because Crispin Glover wouldn't come back.
Right.
But, and they couldn't do anything. So there's nothing to talk about from that part to get you in on the human side of it. The Lorraine Biff thing is just there to show how much of a bully Biff is. So there's nothing in that relationship to explore. And even the Doc Marty relationship is much watered down compared to the first movie.
No, but this movie also explores the Marty versus Biff. This movie absolutely is the good guy versus the bad guy movie. Whereas the first movie is a relationship building movie. This movie is good versus evil. Who will win?
It's an action comedy.
That's a good observation.
Yeah. How will Marty overcome the evil that is infinite, that is Biff?
That's a good observation.
Yeah, yeah, so, and Biff is evil. Yeah, we've always... Yeah.
I think on some level, while the Marty-Biff thing is good, it doesn't give you the same... There's something that vests you in that first movie in those relationships driving the story behind the plot, and you lose. I just don't know if you have that.
This was never made for be a three-part series. It was supposed to be a one-off, and they did it very good.
I think what you're seeing in this is you feel like the payoff at the end wasn't as big because those relationships weren't compounded upon. But I would actually disagree with that. I think that the payoff is just fine at the end where Doc disappears. Maybe we could have had a better relationship with Doc and Marty in this one, but it is still established in the first movie, which is still part of it, which is required to watch this movie. Therefore, I say that having this villain back and forth only makes it better in the third movie when they do all the stuff that they do.
You're dead right. The payoff of the Doc and Marty relationship in the third movie is fantastic.
Yeah. And I think you need this movie in order to have the payoff of the the Biff and Marty conflict in the third movie as well.
This movie was supposed to be the lighthearted fun movie.
Yeah.
But I think it establishes great continuity too, because the that begins with the ending of the last movie, and then it ends with Marty getting that letter from Doc that gives you the setup. So even I remember watching this in the theater too. And when they showed you the Wild West, that wasn't added later, Sickies. When they showed you the Wild West scenes, that was part of the movie.
Well, that's because they filmed both movies at the same
time. That's right. So when they showed the scenes at the, after that, it just geared us up. It was like, oh man, this is going to be
sweet. They wrote both scripts at the same time and filmed both movies at the same time. So that's why you get the nice continuity
between
the two. But
you had that beautiful continuity there. So,
which is definitely nice.
And in a different tone. It was the wrap up. It was the, how do we end this on a good note without...
I'm not saying 2 is a bad movie. What 2 is missing to be the home run is they forgot to tell a story about people and how they tie together in that movie.
So I'm going to use two movies, a movie sequel or series that I've watched recently. I watched John Wick 1, and I love John Wick 1. It's a great movie. It's fantastic. And then I watched John Wick Part 2. And it was a movie that I didn't ask for, but it was a movie that I went, okay, it's not bad. It's definitely not as good as the first one, but it has absolutely made me excited for the third one. I now want to see how this series ends now. And I think that's what Back to the Future 2 did. It wasn't necessarily a movie anyone asked for, but it made you excited for the third movie and the ending and the final conclusion of this. You know, John Wick's not quite that, because John Wick is just something you watch for action fun. Also, I figured out why those movies are so popular. Keanu Reeves has just about 20 lines in the entire movie.
And the rest of it's gunplay.
Really?
Yeah. Go watch.
It's a good... I agree.
I want to see...
Film, but mainly just gunplay.
Yeah. I want to see... It's choreographed fantastically, but I want to see someone compile the literal amount of lines that Keanu Reeves has in those movies, because I would say he probably says about 100 words in the 2-hour runtime.
So in other words, they played to his strengths and minimized his weaknesses.
And also, by the way, he manages to still make the lines clunky and terrible.
Yeah.
Many of the scenes.
But somehow the rest of it was just, okay, well, we're going to get
we'll
him and just go with
that.
Yeah.
We'll go with the gunplay and make sure it's believable gunplay and we'll be good.
I can't think of specifics, but I can think of one specific very famous movie where Keanu Reeves completely makes the line horrible, and that's The Matrix, where he goes, "Morpheus?" And I was just waiting for him to go, "Dude," after that.
We'll get to that.
Anyway. Yeah. But so back to the future. So I think we've gone about as far as we can with this movie. I think it's time to rate it.
A few little plutonium canisters left.
Now, those are radioactive, you know.
Yeah, they are. One of the things that struck me as I was watching this, especially some of the deleted scenes, that Biff Tannen, the alternate universe Biff Tannen, looks suspiciously like someone in the White House right now. And so I was like,
huge.
No way.
Bigly.
I said, no way.
China.
And so I went back and watched.
A huge similarity.
There is. It's huge. I looked at an interview with Thomas Wilson, the actor, and someone asked him that. Did you model him after him? And he said, so you're asking me if I modeled my character from 30 years ago on the current president?
Fake news. He absolutely modeled it off of me, and it was fantastic. It was stupendous. He did it well, and I commend him greatly. It was huge, and it was a success.
Well, Thomas Wilson would say it's a nice coincidence, and that's about it.
So what happened is that Donald Trump modeled his public persona after Biff Tannen.
And all right, so it's time to rate the show.
And then the other one is, I just found a quick one very interesting, is that Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers is in this movie twice. Really? He's Niles.
Oh, okay.
He's the boss in part 2, and he's the racer punk in part 3.
Interesting.
When I look back at that, Flea has got all these little cameos, and that's one of them.
I'll say 2015 is pretty terrifying because you have no security. Like, your boss could literally just be monitoring any phone call that you have randomly because
that's
he wants
true.
To.
That's yeah. true.
I was monitoring your personal phone call, McFly.
Hey, that's not too far from the truth either. I mean, your
boss at any time can jump on your Facebook
without...
Yeah, not mine. True. Mine has privacy settings where I can restrict anyone from seeing it that I don't want to.
But the idea that they can try.
There's ways they could see things that your friends post. They could see your posts through stuff like that. Look, we're not so far away from George Orwell's 1984 either. So,
nope.
I mean, they were talking about in that book that there was one camera that watched you through your TV. We
buy them for ourselves.
Yeah, buy them and put them in every room.
They're called webcams.
I've said this before and I'll say it again. The first time my employer comes and wants to put a tracking chip in my hand or wants to put a camera in my house, I will go find another job.
Yeah.
And if every employer wants to do that, then I will go pick out a good dumpster behind a restaurant.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. So
where there's no camera pointed at it,
the camera can be pointed at me at that point. I'm just living homeless, diving out of the dumpster.
Also, he'll probably just be mooning the camera most of the time. That's how he'll pass time. Last week we did flux capacitors. Let's do gigawatts this week because I don't think gigawatts are going to work.
What the heck is a gigawatt?
1.21, I give it. No, I don't.
All right, so gigawatts on a scale of 0.1 to 1.0. Staying on the scale.
Wait, what?
0.1, so it's 1 through 10, but it's 0.1 to 1.0.
Oh, I'm going to blow this. All
right, cool. We'll start with Rage Master because we don't want to give him a chance.
Well,
let's get the screw up out of the way first.
So it's a...
0.1
to 0.1. Okay, so that's the weird 10 thing.
Yeah.
I'll give this a 9.0. I do like this a lot. I know.
And Rage Master is just screwed up.
0.9.
Yeah. 0.90.
Yes! I have succeeded.
The legacy continues.
A 0.9.
Nice job, idiot. So, no, but I'll give it a 0.90 or 9 or whatever we call it, niner, because it does have those flaws, but the way the movie's written, it's such that you can overlook that. Certain flaws and cinema sins can easily be overlooked when the rest of the story's great.
Yeah.
Especially if it's part of a continuity, a good continuity, which this is. So, and they complete the story. So I'm going to give it that 9.90, whatever.
All right.
I'm going to give it a 0.80. I think it's a very good movie. It's a very entertaining movie. When I was a kid, it was my favorite of the trilogy. As an adult, I see that the storytelling is probably weakest in this movie. I see that the character development is probably weakest in this movie. And while it's a funny movie, and while Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox are amazing, there was nothing for the Jennifer character to do, and she's only in the story because they made the mistake of writing her into the car at the end of episode one. And you lack any of the real interpersonal drama and heartstrings tugging that you really had on multiple levels in the first movie that made it great. So what you got here is just a really cool, really fun movie that to me is the weakest of the three, but still awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to have to do 0.87635.
All right.
Mainly because I would have to kind of agree with Scott in the way that it does have its flaws. It's not 100%. And it's not like the first one where I can just watch that again and again and again. This is kind of one I have to watch it with all three of them. And it's still good. Definitely a good one. And I don't mind watching it at all. But it doesn't quite match up to the first one.
Okay. I give it a 1.0. This is definitely my favorite in the series. This the thing that I love about this movie is it gives me what I want out of the first movie. You know, a continuation of the story. It gives me a different perspective on the story. And it does set up very well for the third one. You know, by the time you get to part two and you finish it, you're like, yes, let's see more of this. I want to see where this is going. I want to see how this is concluded. And whether you love the conclusion or hate the conclusion, you know, this movie gets you very excited and amped up for that. So I love this one more than the other two. So, but I think that's it. Scott,
Send us your comments by email at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com, at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com, or follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Melody. That's it.
Stay sick, sickies.
I'm your grandpa.
Raving Lunatic Mania!